Hello, and welcome to the Software Stories podcast from Venturi's Voice. I'm your host, Andy Davis. In this show, I'll be chatting to software experts from all sectors about their careers in tech. The show aims to bring you insights, anecdotes, and stories from like-minded professionals that you can learn from and apply to your own career. If you like the show and you want to hear more from us, you can follow us via SoundCloud, iTunes, or Spotify, or join us on Slack. Thank you, and enjoy the show. Today's guest is Jay Graves, the CTO at Wunderman Thompson Mobile.
Absolute pleasure to have you on the show, Jay.
Hi, thanks. It's great to be here.
Jay, we were just talking beforehand about he's in beautiful Denver, Colorado. Very envious of that, such a special place to be. But one thing I wasn't aware of out there, but maybe you can speak on behalf of this, is perhaps like a bit of an emergence in Denver's tech hub. It seems to be like there's more and more businesses in the tech sphere kind of popping up around the area. Have they coined a silicon something term in Denver yet?
Oh, of course they have. Although, you know, I've been in Denver in the tech scene for a while, and it's all I've known here. Mm-hmm. But it has seen a bit of a growth, you know, even more recently. But I remember, you know, maybe 10 to 15 years ago, people were really trying to say the Silicon Mountains and compete with Silicon Valley. I think that's kind of been overblown a bit. We're not as much trying to compete with the Silicon anything as much just kind of be ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think there's something to that, isn't there? We've had people from, you know, various different hubs, I suppose you want to call them, around the world, Europe and in the US. And I think that it's interesting that the pull that Silicon Valley still has and the influence on the way that people can behave to building businesses. It's almost like it's like a standardized protocol. But actually, what's more compelling for me is to see these different hubs and really building their own identity. And I think that's what's interesting and ultimately what we want to see. We don't just want it to be a churn shop of Silicon Valley robots coming out. You know, we really want it to have their own identity. And I do think that kind of the area and the culture that that brings can really shape some really more compelling ideas at times.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And we see a lot of that here. You know, Denver really has its own, and Colorado, its own identity. It's known for its kind of outdoorsy culture, and people like the mountains and hiking and fishing and skiing and snowboarding and that type of thing is kind of the draw. And it's the draw that brought me here. And so I think it brings, you know, a great deal of people that have those are priorities in their lives, but they're still interested in technology or whatever that they're interested in. So it really is a great place, you know, as an engineer, as a technologist, and as a company looking to hire good people that have, you know, a good work-life balance. It's kind of what we're known for.
Awesome. Yeah. So give us a bit of a kind of brief overview, if you would, Jay. Just take us a little bit around your kind of background experiences, you know, maybe even, you know, talk a little bit more about how you ended up in Colorado, if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, so I'm from the East Coast, Boston area originally. I went to school out there and then was doing a lot of snowboarding in, you know, New Hampshire, Vermont, and decided that that's kind of what I wanted to do more of, except I wanted to go to a place that had real mountains. So I made my way out to Boulder, Colorado, and slept on friends' couches and kind of got job after job after job in the dot-com bubble burst as companies would come and go every 6 months. And even found myself unemployed for a while, just, you know, in that time in the industry, and just kept sticking with it and just doing what I was doing, and eventually made my way, you know, just making websites, whether it's PHP, Python, Java, for various different companies, and eventually was doing it with a friend and neighbor of mine, kind of doing our own type of new social network platforms that we were experimenting with. And then we started, you know, the mobile app thing happened, the iPhone happened. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't enough to just make a social network that had a website. You had to have an app if you wanted to upload pictures or have that real rich interaction. So I was like, okay, well, I'll learn how to make apps. And so we started making apps, and instead of making websites after website, we're making app after app. And it turned out there are plenty of companies out there that were doing the same thing and wanted that done for them. So I joined up with a company called Double Encore, and they were really early in the app industry, making really high quality apps for some big name players, and that's what really drew me in there. From there, we merged that with another local company called Excellent Creations. They were basically doing the same thing that we were doing, but, you know, we were competing for engineers, we were competing for clients, and we decided, you know, why compete? We can do it together. So we ended up merging with Excellent. And after that, we kind of caught the eye of one of the larger agencies in the country called Possible. They were, you know, a full service digital agency, but we had, you know, the mobile thing down pat. Mm-hmm. And they came on and ended up acquiring us. And so, you know, from those early beginnings, I was just been leading the engineering department all the way through almost for the last 10 years now.
That's crazy. I mean, I can't even imagine the kind of the scope and change through those different kind of, notable moments in time. But what's been kind of the most, challenging aspects to have that, I suppose, success, but also I would assume the growth in the team size and the project scope that has come along with that.
There's really a couple of things, two that come to mind. One is just, you know, acquiring talent and trying to find, you know, engineers to do this, and really the fact of interviewing them. It's always fun to interview new people that are interested in mobile, because there's always people coming to mobile. It's still, you know, a hot industry and people would like to do it. You know, so in the early days of Objective-C, it was all about memory management and trying to do retain release, auto release, alloc, malloc, you know, and basically the interview process was, can you correctly manage memory in an application? And then Apple introduces Arc, and then you have this automatic reference counting, and you don't have to do that anymore. So, like, you have to throw away kind of this suite of engineering questions and problem solvings that you would normally do and adapt to that as people start coming out of school and they don't have that background anymore. And, you know, that just continues to happen today. We just recently had a crop of interns come through, and we do our interview process, and we ask these questions about, you know, database management and relational tables or even NoSQL. And sometimes people have never used an actual database, and we're like, well, how do you store app data? How do you store your state? And the answer is normally these days Firebase. And so it's just kind of amusing to go through that trajectory of, as we keep moving farther and farther up the stack. That's not to say we don't need people who know that stuff, you know, the underlying memory management SQL for when you get to those hard problems. But the average everyday people coming out of some of these schools, they've never done any of that anymore.
Yeah, interesting. That is interesting. You know, I know, obviously, during the show, it's no secret that we kind of get a couple of notes, you know, before we get on air. But one of the things that I know you were keen to talk about was the mobile development landscape and how it's kind of changed in recent years. Sounds like that's kind of one of them. But are there other things that are kind of notable on top of that that you kind of have really noticed has been sort of a bit of a commonality in how the landscape has changed in recent years?
Absolutely. And I think they go hand in hand. That's kind of the second one I was talking about, which is really kind of the battle between native and non-native apps, or hybrid apps, or multi-platform apps. You know, even from the very earliest days, once the SDK was out, you know, when Apple first started it, you know, they said the future of apps is, you know, these websites they were going to do. They were going to write JavaScript and HTML, and that would be your app. That was before the App Store was really a thing. But then when they announced the SDK, it was like, oh, no, here's the Objective-C, here's the UI kit, this is what you're going to be writing apps in, and that really seemed to take off. But that didn't stop, you know, people from wanting to, they have a lot of experience in HTML and JavaScript, and they want to use the tools that they already know, but they want to bring their product onto the mobile platform. So in those, you know, early days, you saw things like PhoneGap and RubyMotion, and just these kind of shoehorning these technologies into, you know, getting a mobile app on the phone. Mm-hmm. And I think in those days it really showed. So it was pretty obvious that this was just a website wrapped in a web view, and it wasn't, you know, a real app. So the way that we really got started with our business was, you know, saying, no, we're going to make premium, high quality native apps all the time. And we're, you know, if you're looking for something quick and dirty to use web technologies to shoehorn your product onto this mobile platform, then we're not the people for you.
Interesting. And, you know, it was the obviously the landscape changed by the platforms available, obviously, when like Android and such became like a player in the market. Were there any kind of specific points of inflection that you noted that really kind of changed things, you know, significantly, that you can look at and think, wow, that, you know, that was a chaotic time?
I don't know that it was a significant point of inflection or a real chaotic time. It has really just been a slow build. And, you know, it really started with iOS and Android and has just kind of slowly extended out into what we call these connected devices. You no longer, first it was, you know, the handset, and then we had tablets, and then there are watches and televisions and cars and voice assistants. And, you know, a lot of them use the same technology. If you're, you know, in the Apple ecosystem and the Android ecosystem, you are writing using the Apple and Google tools to build your apps for all those things. Mm-hmm. It isn't really until you start to get out into some of the voice assistants that it gets a little bit more into the web realm where they're using JavaScript for a lot of it. And even that's not totally necessary, especially on the Amazon ecosystem where you can use almost any language under the Lambda framework. But it really, yeah, you kind of started with this core, and that core has slowly leaked out into all these connected devices. And that's kind of where we position ourselves, is we'll do everything that isn't a website. Right. You know, possible, we'll do a website. We have plenty of people that will do websites. We're, you know, laser focused on those mobile and connected devices that aren't the web.
I suppose that's fun as well, though, because there seems like there's so much innovation in those kind of connected devices now. That's got to be kind of a nice, fun, if you like, project to keep your eye on. It's like, from a learning perspective as well, is to, you know, I suppose be motivated by that and know that, like, oh, that's something else we'll probably better learn, you know, in order to keep up with kind of demand on, being able to kind of be true to our word and our offering. I suppose that sounds, from my perspective, like that would be a fun thing to be aware of.
Absolutely. It couldn't be more exciting. You know, we can't wait for someone to come out with the newest piece of tech, whether it's a gadget. As long as it has an SDK and we can write software for it, we're very excited to, you know, bring our customers' products to those platforms. Amazon's been pretty good about that when they're coming out with all these new Echoes. You've got the look and you've got the show. And now Google's got ones that have screens and microphones, or screens and no microphones. And, you know, CarPlay and Android Auto get updated. And it's like, okay, now we can do things that we couldn't do before. The Apple Watch gets new watch independent apps with watchOS 13. And, you know, we have a whole class of apps that we're either trying to shoehorn in because we're, you know, making it work on a phone and watch. We can just make it work on a watch now. So that is very exciting.
Yeah, interesting. And it's one of those kind of unique situations, really, I suppose, because when I've had like CTOs on the show in the past who perhaps aren't working in the same way that you do, you know, the difficulties with them is like they have to kind of be restrictive on like how many new shiny things they really pay attention to. Because it can be like a deterrent in so many cases where, you know, that's not necessarily the best like solution for like what they're trying to achieve with their product, whatever that might be. You know, whereas with you guys, it seems as though like anything new, it's like, oh no, let's do it. You're like, this is great. This is something else that we can kind of offer. And it's kind of a green light. Whereas, you know, it's very much a balancing act in a lot of, you know, technical departments now to ensure that, you know, we're not just distracted by the volume of new tech that's coming out there, and we have to kind of just, you know, build what is going to kind of be the core of like monetizing. Whereas your offering seems like it's, like I said, green light all the time, which I mean, I'm sure it's not quite as simple as that, but hopefully you get where I'm coming from.
Oh, I absolutely do. And yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think that's just one of the biggest benefits of being an agency or working at an agency is, you know, things change rapidly. Things change all the time, and we, you know, feed on that change. Where if you're working for a product company, you really have your product, you know, first and foremost in mind. You're always doing the best for the product and users of the product. And a new thing comes out, and you may not have the time, the money, the resources in order to build something that would be best in class for that new platform. You know, even though you may want to, you've got to, like you said, it's a balancing act of figuring out your resources versus, you know, what is best for the product and the consumers. And, you know, we try and do that for our clients. We have that mindset. We're always thinking about that for the clients. But, you know, overall, we have enough clients that we want to be able to have the offerings and be able to be the experts in the room when there's something new. So, you know, we are the technology partners for a lot of our clients. They come to us and they say, hey, we heard about this new thing. What does that mean for us? And, you know, more likely we're going to them saying, this new thing is coming and this is what it means for you. And this is what we could do to get ready to be on the platform on day one.
No, that is awesome. That is certainly a benefit. And talking about some of the techs as well, I'm sure there's been kind of positive and negative Can you kind of perhaps go over some of the, is there examples that you were to share? Like, you know, I know in the notes that you mentioned Flutter and perhaps like React Native and what their impacts have been, but have there been some like standout examples, maybe those two, you know, that have like had, you felt have from a tech perspective, have really had that kind of positive impact?
Yeah, it's interesting. That is kind of more of a continuation of, you know, the not so much a huge inflection point that you were talking about earlier, but this kind of slow growth over the years where we've seen in the early days, the phone gaps and the Cordovas and these kind of poor experiences on a hybrid web app. And nowadays, things have really changed. We're going on, you know, the 10 years in the ecosystem, and a lot of the big players are still around and have been improving their product, and some new players have come in with new ways of thinking about things. So, you know, the three that I kind of keep my eye on right now are Xamarin, React Native, and Flutter. And these are all platforms that create hybrid applications or multi-platform. Now, it's not so much hybrid in that it's a web and native. It's multi-platform in that Xamarin compiles down to, you know, a native code that runs on the device. React Native is JavaScript that's interpreted on the device but will run on both platforms. And Flutter, again, is natively compiled down to machine code and runs on your device. And so, you know, we've experienced these type of platforms over the years with either customers asking about them because everybody wants something faster, cheaper, better. And that's what most of these things are promising. And a lot of the times, you know, the promise doesn't live up to the hype. I think we saw a lot of that in the last year or two with React Native, where it kind of had that curve, that hype curve, right, where everyone got really excited about it. And a lot of people jumped in headfirst, both feet. And, you know, Airbnb put out their, like, five-part article, and a lot of other people kind of had shared their experiences that weren't as positive. And based off that, you know, React Native has kind of gone back to the drawing board, and they've have this whole open source blog post series where they're going back and they're saying, we're rewriting this, we're rewriting this, we're making this better, the JavaScript, we promise we'll be faster. And that's one thing that we've seen is that the React Native apps mainly that we see and come across, we call them rescue apps. A lot of times we'll build something from scratch. Most of the time we build something from scratch for our customers, but a lot of times someone will hear about us, come to us and say, hey, I have this app, it's built this way. Can you help us get it over the hump or get it into the next feature or help us get support for this next release? And if it's built in React Native, it's like, oh, now, you know, NPM is a mess. It doesn't compile. They have no instructions. And it's in a pretty poor state, you know, performance wise. And so, yeah, that's, you know, not the best. And I think they're going back to the drawing board and trying to make that better. But I think, you know, a lot of people are still trying to use their web technology know-how and make apps using it. Yeah. And, you know, I can understand it, but I don't necessarily agree that it's the best way, at least today.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Really interesting. And, you know, is there, do you think scope for continue? Well, I mean, there's obviously scope for continuous change, but do you think that there is like a risk that there could be like new players that come in and really change the landscape of what these technologies are currently doing? Like you're saying, the existing players have currently been around. Is there? Do you think there's scope if you were to really think about it from a high, you know, I suppose a high level perspective, where there is a disruption that could potentially come in these kind of multi-platform solutions?
I do. And I think, you know, Flutter is kind of the first one we've seen in that. It's kind of a new player, you know, compared to some of these, you know, React Native and Xamarin. I feel like they've been around forever these days. And Xamarin is just kind of newer on the scene, even though, you know, Flutter has been on stage at the last two Google IOs. So, you know, that's at least 2 years or more being in the public eye. But, you know, still in the history of all mobile, that is fairly new. And they are, you know, changing things up in a different way. Whereas, you know, Xamarin really compiles down natively, but you're still writing app delegates and view controllers and activities and intents. You're just using the C# language. React Native is now, okay, well, I'm writing JavaScript, but it's being interpreted at runtime. You know, Flutter does this whole different thing where you're writing in, you know, a kind of a newer language that a lot of people haven't used or are not comfortable with, called Dart. It has a ahead of time compilation for fast development cycles. It's got, ahead of time compilations for, you know, deploying to the stores, and it's got just-in-time compilations for fast development cycles. But their one, you know, disruptive thing is they're like, we're not going to use any system components. We're going to just throw away the entire, you know, UI kit, and we're going to rewrite everything on this new rendering engine called Skia. And, you know, blit everything to the screen unless that was an OpenGL surface, which is, you know, definitely shook my head when I was looking at that. I don't want that. That doesn't sound good. But, you know, once you start using it and like, okay, well, this actually is a really fast development cycle and this does produce really fast apps and they are high quality. So it is the first one that I've seen that has come along that is new, that is trying to disrupt things. I'm hoping for more, and I have, you know, my own ideas on some of that. But another thing that I do like about it is that it's from Google, right? So, you know, React Native is from Facebook, Xamarin is from Microsoft. Facebook and Microsoft don't put out phones; they don't put out operating systems, and so they're kind of like this third-party wedge that is, you know, if you're basing your programs on them, you're using this wedge, this barrier in between you and the system and the platform providers that are actually, you know, shipping your phones and shipping the operating system. Whereas Google is treating Flutter as a first party. You know, Google makes the OS, they make Android, they make a development environment for it, and Flutter is a completely way for you to create a native app on their system. And by the way, it does iOS too. So that's a pretty big win in my book.
Awesome, mate. It's really interesting. And the first thing that comes to mind for me as well with the innovation in this space is, like, say, the problems that perhaps are going to come from acquiring the talent that's going to be able to be adaptive enough to be able to kind of work on these platforms. Is it as much like that? I mean, how do you kind of even hire for a landscape that perhaps is changing so quickly, or how have you historically?
Well, you know, just looking for people that aren't so dogmatic about what they want to do. And I think the, you know, dogmatism comes later on in a career. So finding people that are new to engineering or newer to programming and of learning things, they don't have as many set in ideas of how to do things, you know, the one true way. So, you know, finding people that are open to that is pretty easy, because there's always new people learning programming, learning engineering, and that are open to that. So we found a lot of the newer people coming in are open to doing things in Dart or Go and Kotlin and Swift and Rust. You know, these are interesting languages that they're open to learning. It isn't so much until, you know, you've been in the industry for a bit and you kind of, again, you've got your hammer and maybe you've gone through the Java to Kotlin transition and that was kind of enough motion for you, or Objective-C to Swift, and you're like, oh, I know how to do this and I know how to do it well. Do we really have to do it a different way? Which, again, is kind of the same mindset of a web developer coming in and saying, well, why do I have to learn how to do this natively when I can just write JavaScript?
Mm.
So yeah, finding people that have an open mind and are just, I mean, honestly, if you're an engineer, I would hope you'd be excited about new languages and learning things. That's a lot of why I got into this business is, you know, learning Python was fun, learning Ruby was fun, and you know, there's always a new language to come out and some new, you know, whether it's reactive or imperative, or declarative and memory management, there's just, you know, there's no limit to how deep you can go if you really are interested in it.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's like, it's a difficult thing to, I suppose, quantify at times, is like people who have a learning mentality. You know what I mean? Like, it's not as easy as like, oh, here's my kind of certifications. Great, we know that they can do this. But how do you kind of quantify someone who is kind of willing to learn and is going to be, you know, consistently enthusiastic about continuing to learn? It's something that, you know, is a common problem in a lot of cases.
And I think that, you know, a couple of years ago, there was kind of this worry that I was reading in the industry of people were like, oh, well, now programming's cool and programming is in demand. So people are going to be having high salaries, which means people are going to come to it only for the money and they're not going to have the love and the passion. And you know, I haven't seen that really be true. I think there are people out there that program for the job and program for the check. And, you know, I can't disparage them for that. If they do a good job, then great. You know, but, you know, the really, you know, good people, the diamonds that are, you know, are those that have that learning mentality that always are interested in what's coming new and it's going to not be stale. Like, I'm 42 years old and, you know, wonder like, okay, well, when is it going to be that I'm, you know, too old for this, or you know, my mind's not as sharp, or I'm like, I don't want to learn that new thing. I know how to do this. Like that's, yeah. I just don't want to get there. So I think that takes effort in actively training your mindset and your mentality to not fall into that trap.
Yeah, but I also think that, like, in order to be good, you have to actually enjoy it. Like, no, I don't think anyone's can actually be really good and consistently good and have a longevity of a career or anything if you don't actually enjoy it. I think that's just, they go hand in hand, surely.
Yeah, I think I couldn't agree more. And it's interesting that there is even more, it's that balance. What do you go through? I think, you know, so WWDC just happened, and Tim Cook said on stage at the end of it, thanks all the engineers who spent their nights and weekends away from their family, to make this happen. And I think there was almost like some booze in the audience. There was a lot of blowback on Twitter of like, hey, this shouldn't be people killing themselves for your bottom line or for your company to make this thing. Everyone should be able to, live their lives and have a good work-life balance. And the thing is, it's like somewhere in the middle. It's not black and white, and they're all correct, and there's some of the truth there, which is that, these people care and they are interested and they do have the knowledge and the passion to put in the time that it takes to get something done. And sometimes those deadlines don't shift. And, if they do enjoy it, they're enjoying it. And it's like, it's one thing to be forced to do something and something to do it on your own volition. And, so it's kind of that middle ground where you have to make sure that people are comfortable putting in the time and are enjoying themselves and find those right people and make sure that everyone is, comfortable with the situation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well said. Well, Jay, it's been a pleasure, mate, to be honest. Thank you so much for sharing. What's next then? How do you kind of, do you goal set? Like, how do you approach things now? I mean, you've already had such tremendous success, but how do you goal set, like from a personal perspective? Like, how do you kind of, do you live in the moment? Like, what's your kind of approach to sort of getting things done and achievements and such?
Come in day to day, we always want to make the best products for our customers and, be the best we can for our people and find the best people and work together. That's kind of the general outset is, just really do great work and do great work with great people and come in with that mindset every morning. The topics that we've talked about today, I really do find interesting. And so like I spend a lot of my time daily, keeping up with the latest in these different technologies, whether it's Xamarin, React Native, Flutter, even the phone gaps in the Cordova, just wondering what everyone is doing. And because I think we are in a time of continued inflection and the balance is always shifting, I want to be ready to understand what a client is coming to us with and be able to turn around and give them the best possible answer, the best possible solution. And that means keeping your eyes on the horizon and not just waiting for something to be done and fall in your lap. So I'm always keeping track of the the Git commits and the issues and bugs and all the latest platforms. One of my latest, we've talked about some of these larger frameworks that are for multi-platform apps. I kind of have like my holy grail of what I would like to happen, which is more of a common layer that can write your business logic, your networking, your database code all once. But then you can go up to the UI layer and then you can use the latest Swift UI and the UI kit and all the Android goodness to get a really great high touch user experience, but not having to write the same code twice, at least for the business logic. And Flutter has ways of doing this. Xamarin has ways of doing it. And but there's also languages that are being able to do this type of type of framework, and Go and Rust are some of them. And so I keep track of those a lot, and that's kind of my daily, go read all the issues and see what's going on and how these projects are moving forward.
Yeah, I like it. Day by day, enjoying what you're doing, and the rest will take care of itself, it seems like.
Yeah, that's pretty much.
That was very overly simplified, but that shows you how much of a layman I can be at times. But no, it's awesome. Really interesting to hear, Jay. We'll leave it here, mate. We're at about 30 minutes now, so all I can do at this point is just thank you so much for taking the time and sharing a little bit of your story with us. It's been really cool to hear.
Thank you. It's been a great pleasure, and I love talking about this stuff, so it's right in my alley.
Thanks for listening to the show. I look forward to hearing everyone's thoughts on this episode over on the Venturi's Voice Slack group. See you next time. Thank you.